From KALW News in San Francisco, this is Cross Currents, context, culture, and connection from around the Bay Area.
I live in Sunnyvale, down by Great America.
Sunset District.
In between Cupertino and Saratoga.
San Jose.
Oakland.
Antioch.
Half Moon Bay.
Yeah, same here, Half Moon Bay.
Coming up, we take a lesson in line dancing from some senior ladies.
You are supposed to be shaking. What's the point in being straight up and down and dry? It looks like nothing.
Then Saudi Arabia's first female filmmaker on how to direct a movie when you're not allowed near men.
They installed a monitor so I can see the scenes and I can see. And I had a walkie-talkie so I can speak to everyone.
And we hear how a double bassist brings modern flair to classical music.
Stravinsky is more heavy metal than for me than Metallica.
That's right. That's all coming up today on Cross Currents. We start today with some news that might inspire you to sing. A team of researchers at UC San Francisco is testing this theory that says singing in a choir can have a positive impact on the health of people over 60. To prove it, the scientists are forming a dozen senior singing groups throughout the city, and they'll compare the physical agility and mental health of the singing seniors to their non-singing peers. One of the choirs will meet regularly at the Bayview Opera House, a place where many people gather in this San Francisco neighborhood. Another is just down the street at the Dr. George W. Davis Senior Center, where a group of seniors improve their health not by singing, but by dancing. A line dance class meets every Friday in the cafeteria, but there's nothing country about this line dancing. It's pure soul.
Go, girls. Y'all go. Y'all hitting it.
The class is held just after breakfast and before the popular catfish and okra is served for lunch. Reporter Leela Day has more in this final installment of our Sights and Sounds of Bayview project.
So we're going to do it over again. Let's start it from the top.
My name is Ella Kendrick, and I teach senior line dancing.
Let's go. So walking.
You have to encourage them. You have to really encourage them to get up and dance. They want to because they can remember. You know, the music come on. It could be an old song that they used to hear, and they'll tap their feet.
And four.
You always have to try a different step. Not the most difficult, because they are. You try something that's short and easy and they can accomplish that little step. That's what they really like, and they get that big smile on their face, and so it encourages them to, maybe I'll try something more. You know? And so when you see them smile, and they say, oh, I remember that song. And they really like that. So, yeah, that makes you feel pretty good.
Step, half, turn, pivot, one, two, three, and four.
Dancing is all about concentrating and listening, you know. You listen and following an instruction and concentrate, concentrate, concentrate.
My name is S.C. Reed.
And can you tell me how old you are?
Do I have to tell you that?
I think.
Well, I'm in my prime. I guess they were saying that, you know, as you get older, you can't do anything, you know. I wear heels. I love heels. I was born in heels. And sometimes my girlfriend would say, girl, you got on them high heel shoes. I've been wearing them since I was 13. I'm not planning on stopping unless I have to. It used to be 50. Well, they say you were old. Well, 50 doesn't apply no more. Because I am 76. And we can rock. Lots of people have their own flavor, and some of the flavor is not appropriate for seniors. You know, we're not trying to do none of those booty scooping and, you know, all that kind of stuff. It's good exercise for seniors, you know. And I won't name no name. I was in another dance class at one point, and I got out because it was just a little bit too wild for me, you know. If I get up in the morning and I feel a little bad, if I sit at home, I feel worse. If I get on up and go on out, I feel better. You know, because sitting around is not going to make you feel any better. I don't have family, but on the other hand, I do because my friends are my family.
I don't feel lonely because I have friends that I talk to and stuff. I mean, not lonely for friends, or lonely for male companionship, yeah. I'm retired, and I come here to stay active.
1, 2, 3, shake.
My name is Sheila P. Reed, R-E-I-D.
You do a quarter turn, and you start all over again with Grapevine to the right.
You can get in a rut, and I don't want to become those people that's afraid to leave my house or my apartment. Oh, no, 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 no.
And then I'll do Grapevine to the left. You go back 3, and you jump and you shake 3. With your hands in the air.
You know, I mean, anybody can just move their legs and do the steps, but it looks awful when you do it like that.
Hands on the knees. 1, 2, 3.
Yeah, you got to shake your hips and stuff, you know, to the music. And it tells you, move to the right, move to the left, shake. You know, so you are supposed to be shaking. What's the point in being straight up and down and dry? Dry meaning that you just making the move, doing the movement, but it looks like nothing.
Right foot pivot, up, back. And that's still a 1, 2, 3.
Some of the women are widows, you know. But we never really talk about it. So it's a lot of seniors that they've lost their husbands. I have this tattoo behind my left ear, and it's a broken heart. I got it in 2010. My husband passed away in 2005, January. It just broke my heart. I still can't talk about it. It just broke my heart because I'll never see him again. So I got that as a symbol. And it makes me, I don't know, it just makes me feel closer by having that on my neck because maybe one day it'll heal. I don't know. But I really can't talk about it because I get emotional. You know, so maybe that's why I keep going, not to think about it. I don't know.
And a quarter turn, and you start all over again.
My name is Marion Reed.
I feel like my body has slowed down, but I don't feel as if I've slowed down. Now I'm on my own, and I do what I choose to do, you know, and when I choose and how I choose, you know. There's about 3 or 4 people has passed away. I think Evelyn was the last one about 2 years ago. We think of them because we hear the songs that they like. That, Hole in the Wall was Evelyn. In the hole in the wall. Mm-hmm. We were so close to them. Mm-hmm. We were so close to them. It's sad, but yeah, that's the way it is.
Well, it has to be good for your memory because you have to sort of remember what's going on, you know.
You learn the steps, and then after you learn the steps, you can put your own flavor into it.
Well, it depends on how far your flavor go.
I might not shake, but it's not that I can't, you see, but I choose not to because I'm okay. So if you want to shake, that's fine.
That's why I wear my hair back. Plus, I have hot flashes all the time, so I can't wear my hair out because I sweat. I'm sweating now.
I forget some things, but not dancing. I don't forget dancing because I've been doing it so long and it's just there.
Okay, so right, left, curtsy, and cha-cha. Step back.
I sure not feel good.
That piece was produced by Leela Day for the Sights and Sounds of Bayview Project, a collaboration between KALW and the San Francisco Arts Commission. The series was sound designed by Stephanie Fu and mixed by Seth Samuel. It featured music by Third Street Productions. You can find more stories from our Bayview series, along with video versions of the stories, at KALW.org. Just click on Sights and Sounds of Bayview. This is Cross Currents. I'm Hannah Baba. Now we go from the dance floor to the big screen. We're used to making movies here in California, but there are still places around the world where that art form is rare, like in Saudi Arabia, which recently submitted an entry to the foreign film category of the Academy Awards for the first time ever. The film entered is called Wejda, filmed completely in Riyadh, Saudi Arabia, by a woman now known as the country's first female director, Haifa Al-Mansour. The film tells the story of a little girl named Wejda who has one big dream, to own and ride a bicycle and race her friend Abdullah. Wejda is playing in theaters throughout the Bay Area through the end of the month. Director Haifa Al-Mansour came by our studios and I asked her how she became interested in film.
I love films. I grew up like in a small town in Saudi Arabia and I grew up watching a lot of films and it touched me in so many levels and I never felt like I'll be a filmmaker. If you ask me as a kid, that is, even in my wildest dreams, I wouldn't be a filmmaker. But when I grew older and I felt like I wanted to have a voice and I wanted to have some presence, and film was a natural choice. When I made my first short, I wasn't trying to be a filmmaker as much as like find a hobby and just like play around with the medium and just enjoy working with films. So yeah.
When did you know this was what you wanted to do? Were you from a background where, I know for many Eastern and Middle Eastern countries, from the time you're little, it's drilled into you, you're going to be a doctor or you're going to be an engineer.
Exactly.
If you're smart, you're going to be a doctor or engineer.
That is what my mom wanted us to be, all doctors. We had like five doctors in there, and we are 12 kids and five of us are doctors. I failed calculus. I felt like I really disappointed her, so she wanted me to be a professor. So I went into English literature. But I was really glad because it gave me access to a lot of ideas, and I enjoyed just discovering Kafka, and there's a whole realm of philosophy that we never got to study when we were in Saudi. So yeah, so I'm very grateful for my mom pushing me to be a professor. I didn't end up one, but...
Failing calculus saved your life and started your film career. That's what we're going to say. No.
Yes.
Okay, so the film... First of all, the talent is all local.
I felt it's very important to have to tell the story in an authentic way. And that is why we went to film in Riyadh. It was the first film ever to be shot there. And it wasn't easy. It's a very conservative culture when it comes to film. But yet I felt it was to maintain the authenticity of the film was important to do it there.
What about the story of the film? A little girl named Wejda.
Yeah.
So Wejda is like 10 years old.
Yeah.
And she is just this fiery little girl and she won't take no for an answer.
من ولدك تتكلم معاه أمس على السيكل؟
أي ولد؟ أنا ما أدري إيش تتكلمين أنا.
أنا تدري زين عن وش أتكلم.
In a society where... when girls do that, or when women do that, try to kind of respond to authority or challenge authority, you're shushed to an extent. Mm-hmm. What was the importance of having Wejda in that kind of character?
Of course, I come from a very tribal conservative culture, and people are expected to be like each other. So I wanted to create this individual who was different, who thinks for herself, who wants to assert herself in the society, and she does it in a way that you cannot resist it because she's a child who's not taking things for granted and just questioning things. And yeah.
And all she wants is a bike.
Oh, yeah.
She wants a bike to play with her friend Abdullah.
That's right.
She wants to race him.
And win.
And win. All the boys have bikes. She doesn't have a bicycle. Why? Explain why.
Outdoor activities are not allowed for women in Saudi. And
and she's considered a woman, though she's 10.
Like, yeah, of course.
Still,
yeah.
She's a girl.
I think she's a child, but she's on the edge of being a woman. And I feel the character in the film understands that it is the last days in her freedom where she can roam the streets and play with Abdullah and everything. And maybe that what made her desire to have the ignited her desire to have that bicycle.
And then she really wants the bicycle, but there are hurdles.
Of course.
And the first one comes from home, her own mother, very caring of Wajda. What is, you know, she's the first person to tell her, you know, that's not a good idea. Why? What's the reasoning behind that?
I think, I think women, like, they reinforce values sometimes in the society that are they think is right and what keeps them, keep the society intact. This is what they think. And for me, I wasn't trying to make women all like victims and they all aspire for freedom and men are the oppressors and all women. It's not true. I think it does not reflect reality. And there are some men like Abdullah, the kid in the film, is really supportive and very, very is behind Wajda. And he wants to see her having that bicycle. And
the shopkeeper, too.
And the shopkeeper, too. So for me, to have this mix of I just didn't want to give a simplistic story about or a simplistic kind of outlook on the interrelationships in Saudi. But for me also, like the love between Wajda and her mother also, like sometimes women, they don't have anything but themselves, like the tender relationship that they have. And for me, writing the last scene was very, it was emotional for me and emotional for Reem when she was acting it, and it was emotional for Wad. Everybody's like this amazing relationship between a daughter and a mother just comes together in a kind of like in a celebration. It's yeah, sad, but it's just like, yeah, solidarity is very important among women.
Yalla, ma jawabtini, tahbina?
Yo, mama. أبوك خطبني وأنا كنت وقتها أدرس الثانوية البنات لما شافوا صورته انهبلوا عليه غاروا مني.
Does the bike signify anything else in your mind, or is it just a bike that she wants, that Wajda wants?
It's a green bicycle, so it signifies a lot. I think it signifies the freedom of mobility and acceleration and being on top of one's destiny and all that, like things that come with the thrill of being on a bicycle and outside in the streets. And yet it is not, it's a toy, so it's not intimidating and it fits the same kind of writing style I wanted to work within the system and make an empowering story for girls and all that, but I wanted a script that passes and we can be able to film in Riyadh. And of course
what does that mean, a script that passes what?
Like you have, when you film in Riyadh, you have to go you have to get permission to film. So, and if I were a little bit more radical or doing things, I might not get that. So I wanted just like to work within what is available for me and just make a story that emotional and engaging about a child. And
And so there are rules you had to work around and work with. And
of course, yes. Like one of them is like the country is segregated. So I wasn't able to go outside and when gender segregated. So men and women are not expected to work together in public. So I had always to be in a van whenever we are outside. And
can you explain to me the van? Like how would you film?
It's a regular van, but they installed a monitor. So I can see the scenes and I can see and I had a walkie-talkie so I can speak to everyone when they are out there in the scenes. For me, it was very rewarding just to be able to make film in Saudi. And if we have to stay in a van, little B will stay in a van. It is, and I don't want to clash with the culture or. And I am a woman making a film in Saudi, so that is enough.
In terms of, you know, opening this window to a society that we don't get to see a lot of, what does that mean to you personally, Haifa?
I want to enjoy like telling stories and about culture and about it is very important to be part of the world and just to bridge gaps and not to be isolated anymore and just like open up and let people know about our culture more. People don't hear much about Saudi. They know only about oil, the economy and politics, but they don't see us how we are in our homes or stuff like that. And it is important just like to open up the country and hopefully people even back home will enjoy the film.
Haifa Al-Mansour is Saudi Arabia's first female director of the film Wajda, now playing around the Bay Area through the end of the month. Details are at kalw.org. Click Cross Currents. ¶¶ This is Cross Currents. I'm Hanat Baba. So far, we've brought you some pretty sweet dance moves, and we've taken you out to the movies. Now it's time for some local music in this installment of Bay Area Beats. In 2008, double bassist and founder of the musical art quintet, Sasha Jacobson, regularly attended the Sunday night chamber music jams at Café Revolution. But after his umpteenth time through Dvorak's Opus 77 String Quintet No. 2 in G major, one of the few chamber music standards that includes the double bass, he realized that if he wanted to play something else, he'd have to write it himself. Reporter Jamie Katsoufis brings us the story in this Bay Area Beats profile from our archives.
The musical art quintet formed actually at Café Revolution during the Classical Revolution jam sessions that are held every Monday night. When we first founded Classical Revolution, the idea was to have a weekly classical jam session where people could just show up and read through chamber music. And I would show up, and of course I'm a bassist, so there's basically one piece of chamber music in the standard rep that has bass in it. And we played that piece. And then the next week we played it again, and the following week I was like, well, I don't even really like this piece. I'm going to have to write some new material. So I ended up writing a piece, and I would bring it in to the Café Revolution, and we would, whoever was there would sight read through it. Then the following week I would write up another piece, I would be furiously composing, and I would print it out, I would run down to the café, and we would just sight read it. For each piece that I write, it's based on a rhythm, and then I carry that through the whole piece. For instance, the milonga rhythm, which is from Argentina and has African roots, is basically this rhythm. A lot of, when they teach it to the dancers, they say, Francisco Sen, Francisco Sen, Francisco Sen. So it's like dong do ding dong dong do ding dong dong do ding dong dong do ding dong. So that's the basic rhythm. The musical art quintet is a classical ensemble in the sense that it's a string quintet, string quartet plus bass, but the music we play is definitely heavily influenced by Afro-Cuban music, jazz, even electronica. A lot of the sound effects that I try to get my musicians to employ, a lot of them come from Argentine tango. I love the sounds, and I think it really adds a new texture to the music, and it's not something that we do all the time. It's just in certain key moments that we use them. And I always think, oh, the poor instruments, you know, if the instrument makers could see and hear what we're doing to these instruments, they'd be rolling over in their graves. We're playing these hundreds of year old instruments. Some, you know, my bass is over 150 years old. The violins can be over 200 years old. And we're hitting them and we're scraping them and scratching them in all these weird ways. And there's a sound effect called chichada, which means cicada. And it's a really scratchy sound that they actually bow behind the bridge. And it goes... It sounds like a giant insect is flying around or something, yeah. My poor bass, I mean, we were playing this benefit for the Pakistani flood victims at Brick and Mortar, and I was doing some percussion on my bass, and I slapped my bass with my thumb, and the whole bass broke apart on stage. I mean, it just cracked open like an egg. And I'm just standing there in shock going, oh my God. I think sometimes people see the group and they go, oh, this is going to be boring. This is going to be classical music. It's going to be lame. And then we just start, and we have this high energy style, and we just tear into it, and we're not sitting down, we're standing up, and we're moving around, and we're improvising, and so I think it kind of surprises them. what we're trying to do is to bring new audiences into chamber music, to bring new life to chamber music, which is really just all about an intimate setting where people get together and play music for their friends and their family and whoever's there. So that's what it's really about. And we do want to, with this music, we want to reach the younger audiences and say, hey, this is this classical ensemble, these five guys playing string instruments can make this really vibrant, exciting music. They might be used to going to rock clubs or whatever, and they hear us and they say, hey, this is pretty cool. I'm going to check out some more classical music, you know, and maybe I'll check out Beethoven and find out that he's just as rocking as any, you know, Metallica or whatever. I mean, Stravinsky is more heavy metal than for me than Metallica, and Beethoven is more rocking than, you know, well, maybe not than Led Zeppelin, but he's pretty rocking. He's pretty high up there.
That piece was produced by Jamie Katsoufis. Musical Art Quintet is playing a free concert this Friday at the DeYoung Museum. Find more details at kalw.org. Click on Cross Currents. That's it for today's Cross Currents. The team includes David Boyer, Jeremy Dalmas, Audrey Dilling, Chris Hoff, Ashley Ann Krigbaum, Daphne Matsiaraki, Liz Pfeffer, Stephen Short, and Mary Willis. Today's show is engineered by Seth Samuel. Casey Miner is our senior editor. Our senior producer is Martina Castro. Ben Trefney is our executive editor. Holly Kernan is our news director. And thanks to you, we are listener-supported radio. For Cross Currents, I'm Hannah Baba.